Hello and welcome to another episode of Not Another Science Podcast. I'm Emily, and alongside my co-host, also Emily, this time we'll be interviewing Professor Philippa Saunders about her work researching endometriosis and advocating for people with this often misunderstood condition. Before we start, I'd like to mention that this podcast is sponsored by GrinerBio One, supplying laboratory, diagnostic and medical products to research institutions, higher education, the NHS and others across the UK. For details of the full product range, visit www.gbo.com.
Hi guys, nice to speak to you. So I'm Philippa Saunders, and I have the title of Professor of Reproductive Steroids in the University of Edinburgh, which means I'm interested in hormones and all things that hormones do, particularly in relation to women's health. So today, the topic of conversation is endometriosis, and I'm going to talk about it. It's an area I started working in about 12 years ago, and it's been really a roller coaster and a really interesting area. And I've had a chance to meet some of the patients. But I particularly find it interesting to work very closely with the clinical colleagues and with a big team who are interested in finding better ways of treating individuals with the disorder. So it's been an exciting 12 years.
For our listeners, could you briefly explain what endometriosis is? People who might have heard the name, but
I think
sure,
that's
actually.
A really great question, actually, because I have to say that I had been a reproductive biologist for years and years and years, and I had never really heard of it. And the first time I came across endometriosis was my son, when he was just in his late teens at school. He had a friend at school, and she got terrible pain, and he phoned me up and he said, "Oh, I don't know what to do. She's in a terrible way. She's in terrible pain. What do I do?" And he took her to Accident to the emergency to get her morphine. And it turned out that she had endometriosis. So I thought, I'd heard of it, but I didn't realize, you know, young people had it and it was so debilitating. So I set out to find a bit more out about it. And I went to a couple of conferences and listened to people talking about it. So what endometriosis is in individuals who are born with a womb, we have a lining of that womb, which is called the endometrium. Now, when you hit puberty and your hormones start going up and down with each cycle, you'll get a menstrual cycle and you know your hormones are working because you menstruate, get a period every month. Now, the endometrium, this tissue right in the middle of your womb, is amazing, absolutely amazing tissue, because every month it grows, it prepares for a baby, and then if you don't get pregnant, it sheds and it repairs without forming a scar, and it does that every month, maybe 400 times in a normal individual's lifetime. But what endometriosis is this amazing tissue, this tissue that's normally in the middle of the womb, growing in the wrong place. So when it's in your womb, it's growing and it's preparing for pregnancy, and by and large it behaves itself, does well, doesn't do anything bad. But then there is a condition called endometriosis where bits of tissue which resemble this lining of the womb end up in what you could define as the wrong place. Now, when it's in the wrong place, we call it a lesion. So a lesion is sort of a piece of endometrium, shall we say. If we look down the microscope at a section of it, it might look like a mini bit of endometrium. And it's growing in the wrong place. Usual places that the clinicians find it is either on the lining of your peritoneal cavity. So that's the whole of, you know, inside your body where all your liver and your guts and your bladder and your uterus are. They grow on the surface around the edge of that. On the ovaries. And when it's on the ovaries, it's called an endometriometer. And it can form kind of big cysts. Or in another type of endometriosis, it can form what we call nodules. And they form, usually, they'll form between the bowel or the bladder and the endometrium and kind of almost stick it together. And that's like a little fibrous nodule. So those are the three main types. But those lesions can be found in your lungs, in your brain, in all kinds of places in the body, and then you get all kinds of symptoms. So the thing with endometriosis is we can take a simple definition, relatively simple, and say there's a lesion, you've got the disorder. The real challenge for the people who suffer with endometriosis is they get a really big range of symptoms. So they might get pain during sex, they might get pain when they pass urine, they might get pain when they go to the toilet, they might get general pain, which goes up and down during the menstrual cycle, and they can have problems conceiving, get infertility. So it's a whole plethora of things. And the other thing is, with the chronic pain, just as in other chronic pain conditions, it can have a really bad effect on your mental health. So people can get depressed, people can suffer from anxiety. And also, if you've got unpredictable, sometimes you get pain, sometimes you don't, it can have a really bad impact on your like social life. You know, somebody says come to a party, but you don't know if you're going to have terrible pain, have period pain, etc. So it's quite a debilitating disorder, and it's very variable in terms of how people experience the symptoms. And we estimate, based on, and it has to be emphasized, these are studies in first world countries, we estimate that between 8 and 12% of individuals who are either women or were born with a uterus and assigned female at birth. Because you can get endometriosis in men as well, because it's these pieces of tissues in the wrong place. So that's it. So, you know, best estimates at the minute, and I think this is an underestimate, might be 190 million people worldwide. So what we're not talking about is a rare disorder. But what we are talking about is a disorder that's underdiagnosed. Now, if you think about it, you think, when would the first symptoms probably emerge? They tend to emerge in young individuals who are first just starting to menstruate, because what happens is the lesions respond to the hormones and they expand, contract, they bleed internally, they get nerve damage, and then they get symptoms. So it may be that a young person goes to the doctor when they are like 12 or 13, they say, I've got terrible pain. And it's not easy for the GPs, because there's lots of things that could cause gut upset, pain upset, etc. So they tend to say, well, we'll start with the simple one. We'll just put you on hormone contraception and we'll see if that calms everything down. And often it does for a bit. But the minute you stop the hormone contraception, all the symptoms will come back. So one of the big problems with endometriosis is getting a definitive diagnosis. And that can take 6 to 9 years. I've seen cases where it's taken people 20 years to get a diagnosis. So that's the big challenge. And I think individuals with endometriosis feel they often get ignored, that they get, oh, you've just got a bad period, darling, you know, go off, get pregnant. All these things have happened. I think awareness is much better now. There's some great patient organisations who are doing really strong work to try and bully the government into putting more money into research. But awareness is still quite low. You know, I even when I've done years and years talking about it, I still come across people who say, oh, I haven't heard of that. And you kind of go, how did you not hear about it? We've had it all over Twitter. And we've been all over the government and we've been all over everywhere. One of my colleagues did a line in one of the soap operas. They had a character who had it. That was good. Except she got diagnosed in a month, so it's completely unrealistic. And everybody complained to him that he made the storyline unrealistic, so he can't do
it. It's a soap opera. Things move fast in soap opera.
It happened in three episodes, or it was never going to be in the storyline.
Yeah. I suppose this is quite dependent on the GP that someone might see. What a GP who also experiences periods might understand better, maybe. I don't want to suggest things. However, what level of menstrual pain is considered abnormal or worth investigating?
Our general thinking is anything that stops you going about your normal life is sufficient to merit investigation. So my pain won't be the same as your pain. People's pains are all slightly different. But if somebody's got a pain that means they are maybe a couple of days a month just lying on the sofa, unable to go to college, unable to go out for a drink with friends, that's too much. You know, that needs to be investigated. But if you've had pain for 2 or 3 years every menstrual cycle and it's very bad, it may not be endometriosis, but it should still be investigated. you know, you should still get to speak to someone about it. The big holdup with endometriosis itself, aside from bad period pains and other things, is that the definitive diagnosis has depended on being able to go and see somebody in a hospital. It's been, you've either got to get to the imaging or you've got to see one of the clinical gynecologists. And what do we all know? That's quite tough to get to that level. But again, once you get to that level, they may not be able to give you a definitive diagnosis that you've got a lesion. And when you've actually found endometriosis, there's a range of different therapies you may or may not try. So you may end up with surgery, which does help some people. You may end up with being given hormone suppressing drugs, which does help some people. But again, if you want to have a family, that doesn't work because they're contraceptive. Equally, if you take a lot of hormone suppressing drugs, you may get symptoms of the menopause, like hot flushes. That's quite difficult to deal with. Or you may just decide you're going to manage it yourself. And quite a lot of the patients modify their diet. They exercise mindfulness. Some find physiotherapy very helpful. And I think we're getting much more open to the idea that there's a range of things that people might find work for them, and we should accommodate those before just doing surgery. So it's a terribly difficult disease to treat, and everyone might need a different type of care.
When the symptoms can be so vague, do you think that's the main reason why diagnosis can take an average of 8 years? Or do you think it is still a lack of awareness in the healthcare system?
I went to a talk a couple of years ago from a GP, and we tend to go, well, why aren't you diagnosing this more often? You know, why aren't you sending them into our surgeries? And why aren't you doing this? And she gave a very good talk, which was really, she's got a whole menu of different things it might be. Now, if someone goes and says, I feel a bit depressed, I've got a bit of gut upset, and I've got a bit of something else, she might say, well, let's see if it's irritable bowel syndrome. And that's not unreasonable. It's this difficulty of narrowing it down. If you've obviously got terrible pain symptoms, I mean, really dreadful, really they should try and get you to the pain clinic where the pain expert people will say, well, we'll do the imaging, we'll do this. But of course, we've got such a big backlog of people waiting to see the experts. That's another problem. I mean, the diagnostic delay is really a shame. We do not have a blood test. We don't have a poo test. We don't have a saliva test. We don't have any definitive test. I have to say there's been no shortage of effort. There's huge effort going into blood tests. And there was one just marketed by a group in Switzerland. But it's depressingly bad, and we don't think it should work, and they really shouldn't be selling it to desperate people for $1,000 a time.
When people present with endometriosis symptoms, often they're just like, oh, I'll take this hormonal contraception. But I know for a lot of people, they either don't want to take it, or that can have side effects that they don't enjoy and that kind of thing. What other treatments are there for endometriosis?
I think for many individuals, controlling hormonal fluctuations using a form of hormonal contraception can be quite good. The more aggressively hormonal regimes that actually suppress completely your hormones, such that you get hot flushes, are probably the ones that are less acceptable. But if you're not opposed to taking a hormonal contraception, it can be great for dealing with period pains. It can be great for dealing with a number of different issues related to reproduction prior to the time when you wish to conceive. So I wouldn't be negative about hormonal contraception as a strategy, because for many people it works well, particularly those with heavy periods and period-associated pain. So the other things that, obviously surgery is an option, but, you know, that's, again, comes with its own caveats. I think surgery is probably the only solution for the people with a complex disease, which involves their bowel and other organs. And that's a complex surgery undertaken by a multidisciplinary team of experts and needs careful management. Where it's more complicated is whether you really want to do surgery for the more sort of less peripheral disease. And if there your main symptom is pain, then what people are exploring are different ways that might be useful for managing pain. So there's all the obvious pain meds that people take, you know, ibuprofen and paracetamol, and they work a bit, but not for a really bad pain. There's obviously opioids, which are great for pain, but, you know, we definitely don't want everybody taking those because, well, there's some pretty bad stuff in terms of addiction. That's not to say that morphine isn't amazing, like for my son's friend who was in such pain that she, you know, literally was passing out. But what's become more, so what we're all on the lookout for now are things which we call non-hormonal methods. So we've been trialing a compound that basically affects the way the body responds metabolically, and that seems to be working usefully well. And that was a cancer drug that we're trying out. But what's become really an emerging area, I think this is a big emerging area, is the idea that actually before you go to any intervention, it's worth considering anything that you can do yourself to take possession of it. And this is where this kind of try out what works for you thing comes in. So as I say, some people I know have done very well with physiotherapy. Others have found exercise helps, but others find exercise doesn't help. So a couple of things that have become very popular. One is the idea that it is an inflammatory disease, so we should try a dietary modification. It's to do with your gut microbiome. And actually, there's some very interesting data about how your gut microbiome might affect your pain perception, which is solid, good data. Not necessarily from endometriosis, but from other conditions. So that's an opportunity which needs further investigation. We just did a big survey of people who respond. The people who responded said we had 2,500 respondents, and we asked them all to say, "What have you tried diet to modify your symptoms? Have you taken supplements? And if you have, which ones do you think helped? What did you try, and what did you think worked for you?" And the most stunning thing to me was there was a massive range of diets that people had tried. A lot of people are definitely trying diets where they've eliminated refined sugars. People are trying out healthier diets, and there's nothing wrong with that. That actually is good for you in general. And they say that has helped. People are trying vegan diets, pescatarian diets, paleo diets, etc. So all of those had some effect on the endpoint of pain. Surprisingly, numbers of people are really doing these diets. So that's interesting. Actually, less than I expected, we're doing this thing. I don't know if you've heard of this FODMAP diet, which is meant to be like totally anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, I've heard of that. You limit everything and then gradually reintroduce things,
But if you do that, you need to take some vitamin supplements to make sure you're not vitamin deprived. And then in the supplements, I mean, I suppose a lot of the obvious ones like peppermint, ginger, magnesium, and others like that. And all of them seem to have worked a little bit. And then the other area, which the pain field have known about for years and years, is the sort of cannabinoid resins, you know, the ones that you can now buy.
Oh, so CBD and that kind of thing.
They actually do seem to have some effect. People claim they get some effect from those. And that's very interesting because there are parts of the world where they are legal and they get used clinically. And there's been some nice studies on in Canada and also in Israel. So that's also something people are trying. Now, I think that the take-home message from this is that we should look holistically at what is the individual's particular need. So do they need pain management? Do they mind if they don't get pregnant, or do they want to have a family, in which case they need a certain set of approaches? Are they really averse to having surgery but in terrible pain, in which case, you know, maybe they do need it, but then they need follow-up? Or as you said, are some people totally against putting anything in their body that might affect them, like hormones, contraceptives, or anything, in which case should we really be saying to them, let's talk about diet, exercise, mindfulness, things that they feel in control of. And I think it's all about stepping back and saying, what's the patient at that stage in their life need? It might be that when you're young, you don't need a family, being on the pill's great because it stops you having painful periods and means you can get going, you can still go to school. Then, you know, maybe you get worse pain and you need some surgery. Then maybe you get to the point where you decide, actually, I'd really like a baby, in which case you need to come off the hormones. And one of the things we're trying to do now is gather information from large numbers of individuals and come up with some algorithms where we can sort of help them predict what would work for them. So we're doing some smartwatch data. We're doing data from diet. We're doing feedback from surveys. And the, you know, the nurses are talking to them about what works for them. Weirdly enough, a lot of the pharmacology and commercial people are going, there's an opportunity here because there's a lot of people needing treatment. And they're beginning to come forward with some ideas about drugs they might try, things they want to do, what do we think about this one? So suddenly there's investment coming in.
Yeah, that was. I was also wondering, how much the pharmaceutical industry is interested in, like, running trials and that kind of thing, and developing drugs.
It's been, so women's health is a difficult area to do trials in. So years ago, there used to be lots of trials when that was all about contraception, and then it all went quiet, and the pharmaceutical people said, and I remember talking to somebody once about 5 years, 10 years ago, and I said, what about new drugs for endometriosis? And he said, you've got to understand it's a terrible area to work in. It'll take us 20 years.
It's also terrible to have endometriosis, I can imagine.
Exactly. So, but I think it's really, really important to emphasize we will never make a difference unless we do have the pharmaceutical companies actually investing in this area, because they've got to make the drugs and they've got to supply them and they've got to be involved. So I'm delighted that they're beginning to come back into the area. But it's a long, long haul. You know, if I have an idea in the lab, it may take 10 years to make a difference and be in the clinic, because we need different levels of trials. But I have to say that, you know, endometriosis is a terrible disorder, and I really feel for people who suffer from it. And I am motivated to do everything I can to improve their lives with new therapies. And I have been quite depressed and fed up in the past about the lack of investment from all sides. But actually, the patients really got motivated and they've been fantastically vocal. And we've got the Scottish government on board with a new initiative. Even the British government are beginning to slightly say they'll do something. The pharma companies are beginning to come through and be more interested in the area. And actually, there's huge momentum. We're actually running a big multinational conference in Edinburgh just next May, and we've had nearly 600 abstracts submitted. We've got all kinds of people coming from 52 countries. So there is hope because people are really working on it.
You were talking about the patients themselves. I was wondering, what's it like listening to the experiences they've had?
I mean, I'm not a clinician, so I'm not dealing with them in the clinic. But what has been very fortunate is we have some terrific local patient organisation groups, particularly in Scotland. There's a group called the West Lothian Warriors, who are just most amazing, and they even fundraise for us, and they've helped us launch a PhD project. We see them quite regularly. There's a great group who formed in the Borders. They're really active, and they've started some fundraising, and they've got a really great local organisers. And there's just a new group formed in the Highlands. And also at a national level, there's the UK Endometriosis Society, who have local organising groups. They have online seminars. They organise research days. We've had some research days in Edinburgh where the patients have come with their family partners and others and listened to research and talked about what they want. And that's, it's always very moving to hear people's stories, but also some of the people who come to these events are women who've had it themselves for a while, and they're worried about their daughters getting it because there is a slightly familial thing. You know, I remember one talk, this woman stood up and she said, it took me 20 years to get diagnosed, and now I'm really worried that my daughter will suffer as I have done. And I think this is, well, it's motivating for us, but also these stories getting out there are really useful as evidence as well. The UK organisation, Endometriosis UK, a very effective organisation, and they've done some really good fundraising recently, and they're, you know, really good with in terms of the information on their website and making it more available. And, you know, more online seminars have come and we're all much better at it now. So I think there is some good news. I wouldn't underestimate how tough it is for the patients, but I always try to reassure the individuals I talk to that we are leaving no stone unturned to help them, and that there is a bit of a plan in terms of lobbying government for money, talking to the pharmaceutical companies, trying to develop new ways of working with them such that they could manage their symptoms better. And I am really hopeful we can get somewhere in the next 5 years. We really can make some progress. And we're going to have a epic meeting next year. And hopefully we'll get some really strong stuff out of that. But if you meet anybody and they mention that they think they might have bad periods or bad pain, encourage them to go to their GP and not give up, and not be told it's not a problem.
Definitely. I guess maybe there's a final question about the Expect Centre thing. I wondered if you wanted to explain that and what it does.
Yeah, so the vision behind Expect is this idea that it's obviously the expert clinical group who are working in the hospital with the nurses, the surgeons, etc., and they're doing great work, but that we needed a dialogue, a situation where we had a platform, an open dialogue with right back to the people working in the lab, because otherwise we're working in isolation and they're treating the patients. So the vision behind Expect was we'd bring together a load of people with an interest and expertise, and particularly in the early phases of research. And we would set up something where we were committed to working together as a team to increase awareness of endometriosis, look at the basic mechanisms that might explain the disorder, and also collaborate as widely as we could with people around the country and internationally. So Expect has got a big focus on the kind of research arm, trying to find new therapies, but it benefits from the fact that members of the team are on the front line, in the hospital, seeing the reality of it and can inform what we do. So I run the basic lab side of it, and you know, we talk about what we might do. And then my colleague, Professor Andrew Horn, he's in charge of all the clinical side, and he's the person who says what he really thinks we need. And he's a researcher as well, and he runs a lot of these clinical trials. So we're trying to bring people together and encourage people to join the team with different expertise. We're looking for people with interest in pain medicine. We're hoping we'll get a dietitian. We become a focus of excellence, I guess. And we have a lot of collaborators. But what we want is to be there if, like, one of these companies with an idea that they want to be involved, they might phone us up and say, can we have a chat to you about what you think we should be investing in? And that takes up quite a bit of time. So I was talking to just a potential investor like yesterday, who's interested in helping one of the companies. And we use it to train students and young clinicians and raise awareness. So we have quite a lot of trainings as well.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, it sounds like it's everything sort of coming together a little bit. Like with the work you're doing, the work, the way the pharmaceutical companies are now getting involved. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe. Yeah.
I think there's such an urgent need. It's amazing how people are finally getting a bit of a grip.
Finally getting on board.
I mean, it's true of any, I mean, it's, you know, obviously there's an urgent need to sort out things like ovarian cancer. I mean, that's just without doubt a really important area. But where there are areas where people maybe have heavy periods, they have, you know, menopausal symptoms, they have endometriosis, they have infertility, all of these are perceived as, well, it's, you know, you just have to bear on with that because, you know, you've got a uterus and obviously there's going to be some pain and suffering involved. And you know what? That is a hangover to years ago, you know, back in the history where women were less proactive and less important. So I think there's a bit of a historical lag there where it's like women's problems and nobody talks about it. Now, the good news is we're all shouting about it now, so they can hardly ignore it. And also the number of times I've sat in a meeting and I've started talking about periods and stuff, you know, and people go, oh, my God, she's at it again. But all these things have helped. They have helped. Progress is being made. It's snail-like compared to what I would like. But actually, it's accelerating. It's so much better than 12 years ago when I first started working in this area. I really see some energy in the area now.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Not Another Science Podcast. I hope you found it as interesting as I did. This podcast is brought to you by the Edinburgh University Science Media Society. In each episode, we explore fascinating themes and ideas, talk to awesome researchers about their work, and find out about the science being done by our very own staff and students here at the university and beyond. If you have any feedback for us, or if you'd like to get in touch with a question or suggestion, you can reach us on our Facebook page, Edinburgh University Science Media, or at our Twitter, @USci. That's @EUSCI. You can also drop us an email at usci.podcast@gmail.com. And you can find the latest issue of our magazine at usci.org.uk.